Going Linux, Episode 75, Computer America, Number 17. I'm Larry Bushy, the host of Going Linux.
And I'm your co-host, Tom. Going Linux is an internet audio program, a podcast, for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows, or just thinking about going Linux, this audio program will provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use your Linux computer. Our goal is to help make the Linux experience easy for you.
Each month, we publish three episodes. We begin the month with a listener feedback episode. In our feedback episodes, we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions.
On the third Tuesday of each month, I appear live on the Computer America radio show. We post those episodes, minus the commercials, as Going Linux episodes.
Our user experience episodes appear near the end of each month. In them, we normally take 2 months to explore a topic related to Linux. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts.
During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for computer users building their confidence and competence with Linux. This is my 17th appearance on the Computer America radio show from August 18th, 2009.
Broadcasting live, it's America's longest-running national radio talk show on computers, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. Look for Craig's weekly column in your favorite newspaper. This show is being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at computeramerica.com. Keep it here for technology news, computer products, guest interviews, and your phone calls. You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show, the nation's longest running nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 18th of August, 2009, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And hopefully you all had a good weekend. Didn't get to see either movie that I wanted to see. I wanted to see District 9, and I wanted to see G.I. Joe. And
save your money on G.I. Joe. That's terrible.
Happened. The song is what really brought James Bond into the public eye, I think.
Well, they've had a number of hit songs from the films of James
but
Bond.
But that was the big one. That was the big first one, Goldfinger. So it was Shirley Bassey sang the title role. Hey, listen, we got so much to do, and I love talking movies with you, and we continue. But if we do, let's bring our guest in because I'm sure he likes it too. And, you know, it's the third Tuesday of the month, and, you know, basically we have these theme shows, and we dedicate the third Tuesday of every month, we devote the entire show to the Linux operating system because it continues to become more and more popular, especially in the wake of Microsoft's iteration of Vista. And we talk about things, is Linux right for you? And, you know, if you do, how can you put it on without burning a bridge? Or if you're a Linux expert, if you have a Linux question, this tonight's a show for you to listen to. Joining us is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast and appears here, as I said, every third Tuesday of the month on a regular basis. Hey, Larry, welcome into Computer America.
Hey, thanks again for having me on the show, guys. And
hey.
About the reality in movies, I have three words. It's a movie.
Okay, look,
if I'm real.
No, it doesn't have to be real, but it depends on the movie. Like, if I'm going to go see The Lion King, or, you know, I'm expecting a child's movie. If I'm going to see a Quentin Tarantino movie, I'm expecting to see violence. If I go to see words that Quentin Tarantino did with was that John Travolta and Samuel Jackson, and I didn't care for the movie, but a lot of people liked it. I can't think of the name of the movie.
Which
The movie with Quentin Tarantino.
Oh,
like
Pulp,
the first
Fiction.
One he did.
Pulp Fiction.
Now, I didn't care for that, but the whole idea they were going backwards and forwards and, you know, the way they were putting the scenes together.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, go all the way back to Alfred Hitchcock and his movie-making techniques. There's a real art form here, and I expect the art to be done to the best of the artist's ability. And movies like G.I. Joe, they just kind of throw computer graphics everywhere don't make up for script or acting. We got to take a break. We'll talk Linux when we come back. More Computer America is coming right up. Stay with us.
And welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. We are doing all Linux tonight. It's the third Tuesday of the month. If you want to get in on the action, you certainly can. This is a wonderful opportunity. If you have any questions about Linux, from a novice to expert, we're here to answer your questions. About the topic, Larry Bushy is here with us. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. He's one of our correspondents who talks about Linux with us. You can interact with us by calling toll-free. 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-8255. That'll get John to get you through. You can also send us an email. That's another great way to interact with us. We have a special email inbox that we have set up when we're live and on the air. And it is, in fact, live, L-I-V-E, at computeramerica.com. It's great if you have, you know, you want to make a point, ask a question, or what have you, but you don't want to go in the air. It's a nice way to do it. Live at computeramerica.com. And when we get it, we'll look at it, and we'll read it on the air. Or you can also go in our chat room. The way that works is you go to computeramerica.com. Right there on the home page, on the left-hand side, it says chat with us. What you do is you create, you know, make up a username. That's the name you'll be known by when people see you in the chat room. Click the login button and your Java-enabled browser, being on a Windows machine, Macintosh, Linux, Vista, Windows 7, it all works. We'll move you into the Computer America chat room. So, Kerry, you were talking to Larry just before we went to the break. Why don't you pick it up?
Hey, Larry, how you doing? Talking with Larry Bushy of Going Linux Podcast. I guess the theme today is Linux success stories.
Yes, it's the Linux success stories. That's right. And the reason we have Linux success stories is because rather than focus on how difficult Linux may seem to the average user, I wanted to take a moment to spend this time to talk about the successes that many people have in installing Linux and using Linux on a day-to-day basis. So we've talked a little bit in the past about, you know, some geeky things. We've talked about resolving some issues that people have. And we've often commented that we may be scaring off the average user. So I thought we'd take a segment and say, you know, it's not all that bad. You know, let's talk about some of these
successes. It's a good idea.
Yeah. So that's I brought a bunch of emails that illustrate the success stories. They don't make very good listening for solving problems, though, because usually the success stories don't involve many problems.
Well, no, so, but this might inspire somebody.
That's the idea.
Maybe
right
thought
there.
It, okay.
I mean, if an email starts off, "Hi, I have nothing to ask or nor complain about at this time." You know, okay, let's move on to the next one.
We have one that may start that way, but
we do actually. We do actually have one, yeah. It's one of the first ones, but I think you should go. Let's start with that and go from there.
Okay, well, sure. Let's start with that email then. This one is from Cross. Now, Cross is a regular listener to the Going Linux podcast, and he wrote in a couple of weeks ago, and he said, "I have nothing to ask or complain about at this time.
There you go.
Now that I have Ubuntu working on both our laptops," he was setting up a laptop for his girlfriend at the time, "there is really nothing left to do but enjoy. It just works. In fact, that may be our only complaint." Oh, wait a minute. He said he didn't have anything to complain about. Well, let's move on. "After your OS just does what you say, what's left to do?
How about productive work?"
There you go.
I got to tell you something, because and there is an interesting insight or a peek into the inside of the mindset of the Linux mind, mind of the Linux user because the Linux user is used to that seems to be the stereotypical vision of a Linux user, is that they're always tweaking, they're under the hood, they're playing around with it. Let me adjust this here, and they're doing all this stuff, and they're not doing the work, or they're not writing the letters, they're not doing the stuff, they're doing all the other things. So here it is. He says, "Okay, well, it's working fine. Now what do I do?" Well,
you
sit down and you start browsing the net and you write letters and you know do your accounting on it and do whatever you normally do,
Right.
And here it is. He's saying, wow, you know. So, but that I would think that would be my first response to a cross, you know. Just well, go ahead and
typical
do the
boss mentality. Get to back to work. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, and for students it goes doubly well, you know, get back to work, you know, right. Do your homework.
Get back to studying.
Yeah.
No more distractions. Well, Cross continues, actually, and he gets into a topic next that I'd like to discuss with Carrie as well, and we'll finish, I guess, Cross's email after the break and get into that topic then.
Sounds good to me. Boy, see, he's got the rhythm of the show now, doesn't he, Carrie?
I'm telling you.
Yeah, it does.
I'm going to take the night off.
866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address of the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Both hours is tonight. It's all about Linux, and more Linux. Give us a call. Get in on the action. If you have questions about Linux, this is the place to be. Stay tuned for more. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com, the email address, or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy, creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us. It's the third Tuesday of the month. We dedicate both hours of the Computer America Show. And we were, just before the break, we were reading, Larry was reading an email that was sent to him by from Cross, who was basically saying, wow, I've finished with Ubuntu. It's installed. I've tweaked it. It works fine. And basically now what do I do? And so you continue on.
Yes, and he may have answered his own question about what does he do next. Carrie, if you recall, a few months ago when you and I were talking, you challenged me to put together some screencasts, and I've been working hard on doing that, screencasts on how to install Linux and so on. And I mentioned it on this show. I mentioned it on the Going Linux podcast as well, and Cross has this to say about that. Anyhow, I have heard you had a few woes with screencasting, and I definitely did, so I've been learning a lot. He says, although I think you have it all in hand now, I wanted to suggest an online screencaster. It's called Screencast-O-Matic, and you spell that screencast, if I could get my tongue out of the way of my eye tooth, I could see what I'm saying. screencast-o-matic.com. And he says, I have not done much of this myself, meaning screencasting, and would like a review if I could ask. I think he means of Screencast-O-Matic. He says, thanks, guys, again, Cross. P.S. I also came across this one as well, screentoaster.com. And before I get into the information about what I have been doing on the screencast that I produced, I'm going to give Cross his review of Screencast-O-Matic and Screentoaster. First of all, Screencast-O-Matic, if you go on their website, it says that let me get my notes here and make sure I'm getting the right one in the right place here. Screencast-O-Matic, yes, says that it's Mac and Windows. And when I tried it on Linux, it was more like Crash-O-Matic. When you go to produce the screencast after capturing it, it crashes Linux. So it's definitely not made for Linux. And ScreenToaster is a lot more promising. They both are based on Java, and they produce a screencast from the web, let you post it to the web, to YouTube and various other places directly, or you can download it so you can edit it or whatever. And the ScreenToaster is made for Linux, Mac OS X, and Windows, and it works very nicely. I haven't really produced anything other than a 25-second test screencast, but it worked just fine. And as long as you have a completely functional computer, it should work great. I first tried it out on a computer that had a bit of a flaky video driver, and not much success there. But once I got it onto a good machine, hey, this is a Linux geek. I've got all kinds of machines here. Once I got it onto a nicely functioning machine, it worked just great. So thanks, Cross, for that email. And Carrie, what do you think? Should we talk about my efforts on screencasting?
Yeah, I'd like to know. I mean, sure. have you accomplished any screencasts yet, or are you still in the process of creating them? How's that going for you?
Yes, I have accomplished four. I have produced four, and you can see all four at screencast.goinglinux.com. The first two were some experiments that I made to try to figure out how to do a screencast. Went through a few different pieces of software to find one that I actually liked using. And I have a bunch more to say about that and the two that I've made for you.
All right. Cool. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com or our email address at ComputerAmerica.com. We'll continue on. All Linux tonight. Stay with us.
And we're back with the Computer America Show, live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. We're talking all Linux this show. If you have a question about Linux, you're curious about it, or maybe you're very familiar with it, and something you've wanted to say about it that you don't hear people saying about it, and you're getting frustrated. You say, why isn't anybody saying this? Well, come tell us what it is. Be happy to take your phone call. It's toll-free, 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. And in the past, as Larry mentioned, Larry Bushy from the Going Linux podcast, I said, you know, these how-to guides and whatever, they're a little difficult to follow. What would be helpful is to actually watch him install it, watch an expert install it. They say it's so easy. It's so easy. Hasn't been easy for me, and I've tried it every few months, maybe once a year. I try installing it. Something doesn't work, and I get frustrated, and I just go back to Windows. And I said, you know, if I had a guy like Larry here to install it for me, I bet it would install no problem. And you know, whatever didn't install, he could just go, oh, this is easy. Boom, 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 be good to go, and set me on my way. You know, take the training wheels off for me, and let go of the bicycle once I get rolling. And I thought, well, since that's not really possible to have Larry come on over and install it for me, and it doesn't really help any of you out there, what if he could just put together some videos, some screen captures of the installation process so we could watch him do it, look over his shoulder virtually, and even hit rewind and watch it again. If there's something he did really quickly or something we didn't quite understand, we could go back and see it again, which would make it better than if he was here. You know, because then I could do it 2-3 o'clock in the morning in my underwear, and that would just be awkward, quite frankly.
Thanks for that image.
Yeah.
I'm glad I was wearing underwear. So now, what's the what's the end result on this? Have you created some screen captures, and where can I see them?
Okay, if you go to screencast.goinglinux.com, you'll see screencast number 1 and 2 are about creating an audio podcast using Audacity. Those were my test screencasts. And then immediately following that, there's one entitled Burning a Linux CD. So I started with how do I get Linux? And what I've done is I have picked up from where you have downloaded an ISO image file, which is a file that ends in the extension .iso, and that's a standard file for a CD image. And so assuming that you've got that on your computer somewhere, I've gone through three scenarios of burning that CD from that ISO file. And I've used three computers that I had lying around here in the Going Linux Labs, and which is my office at home. I took Windows 2000, which I happen to have Adaptex Easy CD Creator installed on there, and that's the CD burning software that I used for burning an Ubuntu 9.04 CD. Ubuntu, for our new listeners, is a version of Linux, probably the most easy to use, easy to learn, most familiar for folks out there, and that's why I chose that one. It's got a lot of good support as well. So I looked at Windows 2000 and recorded how to burn a CD using that. I also illustrate how to burn a CD using an Ubuntu 8.10 computer. So that's an earlier version of Ubuntu, assuming that maybe some of our listeners might want to upgrade and have never burned a CD before. Maybe they purchased a computer with Ubuntu on it and want to upgrade. And the software that comes on Ubuntu by default for burning CDs is Bracero, is the name of the disc-burning software there. So I've used that as the second illustration. And the third one is from Ubuntu 9.04, which is the version that I'm using, and K3B, which is another very, very popular CD and DVD creator software for Linux. And I illustrate exactly the same thing, walk through exactly the same step using those three scenarios. So there should be no excuse for people not burning the CD correctly. So I chose Windows 2000 because I figured that there would be a lot of people out there who might have a very old computer, maybe running Windows 2000, hopefully not as old as Windows 95 or 98, but Linux runs fine on those as well. I think the illustration for Windows 2000 would probably walk those folks through it as well. Now, I also, at the end of the screencast, mentioned that Windows XP and Windows Vista do not come natively with CD or DVD burning software. You actually need to purchase that if your computer didn't come with that installed by the computer manufacturer. Maybe your computer manufacturer, when they installed the CD burning hardware on your computer, it was gracious enough to provide you with some CD burning software to go along with it. Some do not, and so I've provided some suggestions on where you might go to get a free ISO recorder software that allows you to burn at least the ISO image of a Linux CD so that at least you can get that done.
Hmm. All right.
Oh, that's screencast number one.
Yeah, okay.
And how long is it?
It is, it's not too long. It's probably about 15 minutes, I would say, something like that.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little bit too long to put on YouTube because I think their limit is
Facebook, you can go to 20 minutes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm. It's ironic. Facebook video is often better than YouTube video. I think the quality is better. The length is twice the length. And
even the high-definition version?
Right.
Oh, high-def looks amazing. I mean, you should see some of the videos I shot on Facebook. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
You can see the break-in of my car in HD.
Well, they have a high-def version on YouTube, too, so.
No, they do, but it's weird. The high-def, the point is that, like, I've got a series of how to put a computer together on YouTube. It's a 10-part, 10-minute series, and on Facebook it's a 5-part, 20-minute series. So which would you rather look at? I mean, to me, it's, I'd rather have the 5-part,
Is it the same video and you've just
it's the same video. Do you want your pizza cut in 8 slices or 4? Well, I'm not that hungry. You better not cut it into 8. It's the same video, right? It's the same size pizza no matter how you slice it. It's just more convenient to not have the interruptions, twice as many interruptions, because you have to continue the video. On my videos, when I split them, I like to go back about 30 seconds so that you can tell it's a continuation of the previous video, a little bit of overlap. But, it's weird that Facebook has better video services, in my opinion, than YouTube does. I think the quality's better. I think that the oftentimes YouTube freezes on me during the playback. Facebook rarely, if ever, does that. So just a thought, do you have a Facebook page, Larry?
I do, and I need to create one for Going Linux for the podcast, so I might just go ahead and do that.
If you do that and upload your videos there, I'll share them on my site, too, so that all my followers on Facebook. It's funny, I went to Facebook kicking and screaming. I really didn't like it. I sort of treat it like a diary. I don't just use it for tech info. I use it to just talk about my life. And I think in a couple of years from now, I will appreciate going back and rereading what I went through now. And I mean, I don't know how long that information will be available, but the longer it's available, the more valuable it'll be to me, that, you know, the nostalgia factor.
Oh, Google will archive it forever.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah. But right now I haven't experimented around with putting the videos on YouTube or anything like that. For the audio program, we host our audio files on the Internet Archive. They provide file storage for free. And I have put our videos there as well. And we have different formats. We have the free and open source OGG video format, as well as AVI and MPEG-4 files up there as well. So for each of these four screencasts that we have. So you can watch it in high quality if you want, high definition, or you can get you can play it right from the screencast.goinglinux page if you want. And that, I think, is a lower quality. But I wanted to make it available in multiple formats, and I was going to put it on YouTube, but then I thought, you know, I'm going to have to split it up, and I didn't want to take the time to do that. So I've made it available in multiple places, but if you say Facebook is the place to put it and you're offering to share it, I'll yep. set that up and let you know when I've got both of these up there for you.
Please do.
Yeah.
Hey, when we come back, I'll just talk a little bit about our the contest that's going on, that's running now through August and September. Hey, did you see the new graphic I put up on the website, Kerry? You know, for the big blue banner? We've changed it.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. It's actually the first animation we've had on our homepage in a long time. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. It's all Linux tonight. We'll continue on right after this. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy is with us.
It just, listen, it pays to be a Computer America listener, I'll tell you that. It does. Now we're talking about free operating systems, free Linux, and free tutorials on how to get it installed.
Yeah. Larry?
I'm telling you.
Yeah. Linux is all free. For the most
part.
Yeah,
well, we're just about out of time here at this of this hour. But we're going to continue on in the next hour talking more about Linux. If you have a question about Linux, call us. It's a good time to queue up in this break between hours. The number is toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 8255 if you don't have letters on your phone. It's live at ComputerAmerica.com is our email address. Join us in our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We're hanging out in there. There's room for you.
All right. And we'll be back. We'll be right back after your local and national news for another hour of Linux with Larry Bushy here on Computer America. Stay with us, please.
Broadcasting live, it's the only national radio talk show on computers to air every weeknight, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live at ComputerAmerica.com.
Hello, and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And we continue on with our All Linux Night. That's right. Every third Tuesday of the month, we devote the entire show to the Linux operating system to order, answer your questions, read your emails, call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK, 866-606-8255. The number gets you in and on the air, live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address, or, of course, the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com, where our guest tonight is also participating. He's the only one in green. He's shown as Going Linux Larry, and that is, of course, Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us in hour two of Computer America. So, Larry, so we were doing emails, and let's want to continue on with that?
Sure. Well, before we do that, though, just to wrap up from the first hour, we were talking about the screencast in response to an email we had from Cross, and right. I mentioned that we had finished a second screencast for Kerry, and the first one was how to burn a Linux CD. The second is, now that you've burned a Linux CD, how to install Linux on your computer from that CD.
I love the steps. You're not taking anything for granted. You go right from getting a file, burning the file, installing the file. This is how, if I was going to do it, this is how I would do it. You don't take anything for granted that the user knows any steps. Follow me, just like a little bouncing dot over the words on the screen at the karaoke bar.
Well, I tried, but I realize I left out a step. How do I download a file from the internet? Well, maybe we can assume that they know how to do that, but
no,
maybe not. Maybe not.
You need to cover all of it. And then you know what's going to happen, because it happened to me. You're going to have people write into you and say, these videos are great, but why don't you do a video on how you did the videos?
Yes.
So be prepared for
that. I think you asked for that, as a matter of fact, and I'll be doing that eventually as well.
What do you have planned for the next – I mean, how many videos do you think you'll do, and what steps do you think you're going to cover?
Well, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk next, do a screencast about how to set up your computer, how to connect to a printer, how to maybe set up a home network, maybe mm-hmm. a more advanced one. Some of the basic things that people would need to do to be able to use Linux at home, and how to, start at the beginning. How do I download the CD? How do I install it? How do I install a printer? How do I print? How do I browse the Internet? How do I find a program that does what I used to use X for on Windows? Go through all of that, and, how do I get all my software updates for free, and how do I find software without having to go searching through the Internet for software, because it's all available in what Linux calls repositories. So those are the kinds of things that I have in mind for the next
Not
step.
Depositories.
No, not depositories, and not the other kind.
Suppositories?
Yes, no. Anyway.
Repositories. All right.
Yes,
just to be clear.
Yeah, software repositories, kind of a candy store of free software that's designed for Linux and designed for do all the things you used to do on Windows and have to go down to the computer store or the Best Buy or whatever and purchase your software for anywhere from, $2.99 for some discount thing sitting on floppy disks to $400, $600, $800 for some of the more pro version software. Much of it you can do on Linux at no charge. So, and that's what I want to be able to walk folks through. So,
I just want to say, truthfully, I want to look forward to watching this video on Facebook, and maybe you will inspire me to. I mean, since you're going through this effort of creating these videos, I will meet your effort and go through the effort of not only watching them but trying once again to get Linux installed on a box I've got laying around here.
Okay. And I've chosen for the install, that's a deal. I've chosen for the install a Linux Mint 7 for the install screencast. And that's the one that I would recommend for you, Kerry, primarily because, and for most of our listeners, primarily because it is Ubuntu with all of the extras pre-installed. And by extras, I mean all of the stuff that Ubuntu leaves out because they want to be unencumbered by patents and things like that. Linux Mint pre-installs MP3 playing software. It pre-installs all the things you need to play a DVD and CD, all the codecs, in other words. So all of that's already there on Mint 7, and for the most part, you can install it and begin doing what you need to do right away without any extra fuss, muss, and bother.
Hey, listen, we got a question in the Computer America chat room. Has anyone ever gotten Google Earth working in Linux? You say he installed it using Synaptic and Ubuntu, but he can't find out how to run it.
Yes, when it first came out, Google Earth was prepackaged with a version of Wine. Now, Wine is an environment for Linux that allows you to run Windows software, and so Google had packaged their Windows version with a custom version of Wine, and it ran under Wine in Linux. But since then, they have ported the whole thing over to a native Linux version, and it has run just fine on my computer. You have to have a computer that is pretty beefy, whether you're running it under Windows or whether you're running it under Linux, and I imagine Mac as well. And if you've got something that's a recent computer, it should run just fine. So you might want to check, make sure that your video card's set up right, things like that, because it does use some pretty extensive video resources to be able to zoom in and do all the things that magically happen on Google Earth. But, yeah, it runs fine. Many people run it fine, and I've had it running. So I don't know where the question is coming from, but that's kind of my experience.
Yeah, it's Addison in the chat room has asked that question.
Okay. Right. Very good. Yeah. Well,
if he wanted to say instead of saying he had trouble getting it running, he said, "How would I install it, what were the steps that you would offer right from the gate to getting the right version of Google Earth, knowing which version to get? And then does it have to be in a specific version of Linux to run it? Are there any steps other than that in Linux you'd have to run to get it to operate properly?
No, I don't think so. I'm reading his post in the chat room here now, and he said that he went to the package manager to get it, and that's where I would recommend you go for any software that you need before you go searching out on the internet, even on Google's site for something like Google Earth. The version that is in the repositories that you get through the package manager in Ubuntu or whatever your distribution of Linux is the one that's tweaked and designed specifically and tested for your distribution. And he says that's what he did. I'm not sure why it wasn't running for him, but that would be what I would recommend. So I'm not sure what went wrong there.
What is the correlation between a package manager and a repository? Are they one and the same with two different names?
No. A package manager is software that is installed, pre-installed on Linux. It is where you go to get the software. If you think Windows, think add and remove programs, except in addition to being able to remove programs that you've installed, which is what most people use add and remove programs for in Windows, you can go into the package manager in Linux and you can search for a package you don't have installed, and it searches something called a repository, which is a list of software applications that are available if you've got Ubuntu on the Ubuntu website. And when you say install, it downloads and installs that software and anything else it needs that's not installed on your computer to make it run. So a repository is a library of software, and the package manager is what enables you to go look in that library, find what you're looking for, and install that software on your computer.
There you go.
Okay. I think I understand that.
Yeah. So something else from the chat room from earlier, Laura in the chat room had asked about...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, is it possible to install Vista and Linux on the same computer? She just bought a computer with Vista pre-installed, and she was wondering how to get it installed. So rather than type out 8 paragraphs in the chat room, I thought I would bring it here and talk about it a little bit. There are a number of different ways you can install Linux on a computer that has another operating system, whether that is XP or Vista or another version of Linux or something else. And the first way you can do it is to follow the video, the screencast, on how to download your ISO image and burn it to a CD, then insert the CD in your computer and then reboot your computer. It should boot from the CD. And then if you are using a CD like Ubuntu or Linux Mint, or one of those that is termed a live CD, it will boot into that version of Linux. It'll be running off of the live CD, but it will also allow you to install the software from that live CD. So while you're browsing the web, while you're exploring around Linux, while you're figuring out what is what, you can actually be installing it. Now, the video, the screencast, walks you through how to install it instead of your current operating system. But I take a couple of seconds to show you what it would look like in that screencast if you were to choose to install it with alongside it, what's called a dual boot situation, which is what Laura is asking about. And you can do that by using some of the free space that you may have on your Windows computer. And since this is a new computer that Laura has, I'm sure there's a lot of free space on that hard drive. So I would say take maybe half of it, or if you're not that adventuresome, take a little less than half, and dedicate that to Linux. It will ask you during the install process how much space you want it to use. And once it's finished installing, you can reboot your computer, and it will then, as you're rebooting, it will say, which do you want to run, Windows or Linux? And you make your selection, and that's what you boot into. That's method number one.
And that's method one. Can I ask your opinion on one method that you may be on your list that you haven't gotten to yet? What do you think of Wubi?
That was method number two.
Ah.
Wubi is an excellent way to start. And if you are If you're sure you want to use Linux and you want to dual boot it, use method number one. If you're not sure, you can certainly run from the live CD and experiment around and never have to install it. You can just test it and run it when you want it from the live CD. But if you want to actually install it, but you're not sure you want to keep it, Wubi is the way to go. Take that same CD that you just burnt, and instead of rebooting, while you're in Windows, insert the CD into the CD drive, and magic will happen. And we'll describe what that magic is after the break.
This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, or our email address at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all Linux. We'll continue on with more right after this. You're listening to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address, or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. All right, we are talking about Linux. Larry Bushy is here with us here on the Computer America Show. And what I wanted to do is go to that next email that we had from you for Ray. Why don't you go ahead and take that up?
Okay. Ray wrote to Tom, my co-host on Going Linux, and me the message for Carrie.
Yeah.
Ray said, hi, Tom. Hi, Larry. Remember, guys, this is the Linux success story show, so this is going to be a success story.
Okay.
Ray wrote, Larry, would you tell Carrie from Computer America that if Ray can install Linux Mint, dual boot, and triple boot without help, he certainly can. I did this several different ways. Two hard drives, one hard drive, and just by accident, I found out Mint could be installed inside Windows, and he's talking about Wubi here, and installed even easier with add remove programs. Now, and I should have said, and uninstalled even easier with add remove programs. Now, to be fair, I did use a test machine on my first few attempts. And since then, I have installed Mint on about 10 PCs, all dual boot. So please convey to Carrie, he doesn't need help doing a Linux Mint install. You guys are great. Thanks very much for your hard work, Ray.
I never tried Linux Mint. I my attempts were Ubuntu and Wubi, and it wasn't a problem getting it installed. It was a problem getting everything to work. You know, I think of the last attempt. My motherboard's network card, which was an Intel-based motherboard made by Intel, which I wouldn't think was an off-brand or anything that wouldn't be supported, the network card wasn't detected, and I had no idea how I'm supposed to get the network card driver without a network.
Yeah.
You know, it was just one of those situations. And that was, I think, and then the time after that, I think I used Wubi, and Wubi got it installed, but then I just didn't know what to do with it, so I think I uninstalled it.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, and that's the kind of thing that I want to cover in the screencast is to maybe talk about and walk people through some of those issues like network cards and how to resolve them and that sort of stuff. But when you talk about Wubi, Wubi is not a distribution of Linux. It is an installer. And if you, before the break, we were talking about Laura's question, how do I get Linux and Vista installed together on my Vista machine? Wubi is one way to do it. And if you put the Linux Mint CD, the live CD, or an Ubuntu CD, or many other CDs, into your CD-ROM drive while you're in Windows, it will magically start up the Wubi installer, and it will ask you.
Really?
Yeah. Do you want
that
to?
Wubi's come a long way, then.
Oh, it certainly has. It's installed when you tried it out. It was its own little software program that.
Right, and they gave you the version of Linux that it came with.
Right. Well, since then, the folks at Canonical, who are the folks behind Linux Mint and not Linux Mint, it's a derivative of Ubuntu, the Canonicals behind Ubuntu, they have incorporated the software technology from the Wubi developer onto their live CD. So all you have to do now, if you have an Ubuntu CD or any of the derivatives of Ubuntu, like Linux Mint, Just insert it into your CD-ROM drive while you are in Windows, and it starts up the Wubi installer automatically. And it offers you the option of running it as a live CD, in which case it will just reboot and boot from the CD. Or it says, do you want to install Linux inside of Windows? Mm-hmm. And that is what Ray was talking about. And if you do that, it walks you through an installation process that takes a little piece of the free space on your Windows drive, except it doesn't create a whole new partition. It really just creates a file inside of Windows that will install Linux to that file and allow you to boot to it.
But it acts like a partition. It's like a virtual one.
It acts like a virtual partition, yeah. But the nice thing is you can uninstall it from add and remove programs if you decide you don't want to do that.
Right.
Hey, this is Computer America. We'll continue on. It's all Linux this hour. Stay with us. Larry Bushy, creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, continues on with us. We got an email. You got an email from Jonathan, who was a visually impaired Linux enthusiast, right? And what does he have to say?
That's right. Well, he builds accessible Linux computers, and he's setting up a website to sell them on the web. Jonathan and I have corresponded quite frequently over the past year or so, and he's been working through what it takes to set up Linux computers for the blind and for other visually impaired folks. And he writes to us saying, hello, Tom and Larry, Tom being my co-host on Going Linux. I was wondering if it's okay to put your back catalog, he's talking about back catalog of our podcast, on computers that I am pre-installing with Linux. This way, if they are new users purchasing the system, they would have some great content to listen to and learn about Linux operating system. Thank you for your time, and keep up the great work with the podcast. And I responded back to Jonathan, absolutely, of course you can. All of our podcasts are licensed under a Creative Commons license, which allows you to copy them, distribute them, include them in other things, as long as you just mention where you got them from. And that's the only thing you need to do. So, Jonathan, you're very welcome to do that, and I appreciate and am very honored that you would consider our podcast worthy of installing on computers by default.
Very cool. Now, this next email is from Trihexafeneral, Dill.
And... very good attempt at that one.
Yeah, it was easy for you to say.
Yeah.
I don't know why someone would name themselves after an anti-Parkinson drug, but...
I don't know.
An anti-Parkinsonian drug, but hey...
Because if he said his name was Michael J. Fox, we'd all be all excited, and he's got to use a...
Yeah, he wants to remain anonymous, I'm sure that's what it is. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're just going to break for 60 seconds, and we'll continue on with these emails. This is our All Linux show tonight. Stay with us.
And we're back with the Computer America show. It's our all Linux Computer America show that we do on the third Tuesday of every month, joined by Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast, a free on-demand audio that you can listen to on your computer or download and burn it to a CD and take it with you in your car and listen to it on the drive to work or on your MP3 player if you're on the train or on the bus. It's something to listen to. And, of course, just to have it playing on your computer speakers while you're working or playing on the computer. And we're answering listener emails right now, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce the name for this one. So, Larry, please continue.
Okay. Whoever this person is, let's just call him Michael J. Fox. Hello, you guys. And for those of you who just joined us after the break, you'll have to go back and listen to the recording.
That's what you get for showing up late.
That one up. Yeah, exactly. Hello, you guys. Have a great show. I wish I would have discovered you guys a lot earlier. I have totally converted to Linux. Don't even dual boot anymore. Microsoft shut off my XP because I had reinstalled it on my computer so much. Linux, on the other hand, will never shut me off. Keep up the good work on helping people switch to Linux. Wish I could have switched sooner.
Well, and, hey, that's great. I mean, listen, That says it all right there. And Microsoft probably lost a customer for life now as a result of this. And this person, you know, even though they say they wish they would have known sooner, I think they learned at just the right time. I think that ultimately is what happens.
Maybe
and,
so.
And they can go forward and share it with their friends and show people how easy it is and how it can replace their Windows. And it becomes the beginning of the end for Microsoft.
Right, exactly. And, you know, although Microsoft allows you to install XP only a certain number of times and then they, quote, shut you off, you can get
that's
an extension
true.
To that. Yeah.
That's there. There's nothing in the EULA that says it can only be installed so many times.
Right.
I've installed the same copy of Windows. It's got to be somewhere in three digits, more than 100 times on numerous computers in my lab. The folks over at Maximum PC, we've had Will Smith on the show. He's got test benches. He said he doesn't know what people are talking about either because he just has a regular OEM. It wasn't anything given to him from Microsoft, special copy of Microsoft XP. And he says he installs that and activates it over and over and over again. And, yeah, they have to call and get the activation over the phone, but it's never been a problem where they said, we're going to refuse to activate it any further. That's quite interesting. I would love the opportunity for somebody to be in that situation where they're saying Microsoft refuses to activate this copy of Windows. If you're in that situation, please email me because I would love the opportunity to confront Microsoft on that issue. And I can virtually guarantee you that you will have an activated Microsoft XP when I'm done because I've yet to see it. I've heard these stories, but I've never actually witnessed it firsthand.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder why is somebody reinstalling XP so many times. Now,
who cares?
I think
they have the right
scenario
to do it.
Well, sure, unless they're installing that copy of XP on multiple computers, in which case they are definitely, if they get to the point where they've installed it on so many computers that it is, quote, shut off, I have to wonder, and there's a couple of reasons that I can think of. One is they're making copies and putting it on other people's machines for them, which I think is
that's a heck of an accusation to make to somebody you don't know and have never been to their house anything about them.
True. So
you always have to give the customer the benefit of the doubt.
So giving him the benefit of the doubt, let's assume that he's reinstalling it because he's always getting spyware and viruses and all that sort of stuff and hasn't figured out how to or doesn't have the technical expertise to or can't afford to have somebody remove those for him, and he just reinstalls it to fix the problems. Well, either case, Linux would solve the problem. First of all, Linux is an insulator from viruses and spyware. I'm not going to say it's immune to it. It's just that virus writers don't write viruses for Linux any more than they write it for the Mac. You know, so you're insulated from the fact that most virus writers are writing it for the vast majority of computers that are out there, which are Windows computers. And if it's a situation where this person wants to be kind to other people and provide a free operating system, well, Linux allows you to do that, and there is no question that you're allowed to do that without any restrictions. That's what Linux is for. It's a free open-source operating system that allows you to make copies, to install it on as many machines as you want, give it to your friends, give the CDs away, install it on their computer for them, whatever you want. It's designed for doing that. And open-source, for listeners who don't understand what that is, think Firefox. Do you have to pay for Firefox?
Yeah, no.
It's an open-source program that is designed and given away for free, and it rivals Internet Explorer and doesn't have many of its issues. And it's a browser that most Linux distributions use as well.
McCary, you were very silent when he said that about your favorite browser.
Mm-hmm.
You let him get away with it.
I just read on the Facebook, I was debating whether I should even say anything about it.
Yeah, I can hear it.
I could tell. There was a link posted that the most secure browser was Internet Explorer. And,
well, as long as you have any virus software.
Well, but the thing about the and this is the thing that I guess I like to be clear on with our audience. Although we have a pretty technically savvy audience, but for the folks out there who aren't technically savvy or don't consider themselves to be technically savvy, is there is no such thing as purely secure operating system when you're on the internet. Nothing on the internet is entirely secure. You can still be a victim of phishing schemes. Just as, I mean, if someone tells you your PayPal password is out of date and you need to change it, or there's a problem with your account at Bank of America, you need to log in and fix it, well, you're still going to fall victim to that, regardless if you're on a Mac or Linux or Windows.
That's more social engineering.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it won't matter what operating system. So you cannot compensate for education, knowing what to click on, what not to click on, simply because you're running Firefox or you're running, you know, Linux, a version of Linux. So you still have to take the steps necessary to not get yourself, get your identity stolen. Now, the emphasis is on the sort of like the drive-by downloads that, that happen in Windows XP all the time that people get fall victim to, which they would not fall victim to if they educated themselves, if they took the time to not do the things that are causing that. So to suggest that they're going to take the time to not get in trouble in Linux, but they won't take the time to not get in trouble in XP, doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Because to me, it's if you were willing to put forth the effort to not get yourself in trouble in Linux, you wouldn't be having trouble in XP.
Right, and you know, I'm not making an argument for uninformed users, because, you know, and those people that don't take the time to get educated. I mean, there are some people who just want to turn on their computer and use it.
That would be most people.
Yes, right. Exactly.
And just there's no pills you can take to give you muscles. You have to go and you have to put effort and work out. That's how you get the muscles. You can't just take a pill and become and lose weight. You have to put some effort into it. And so you're not gonna have a Linux pill that's gonna save you from all the security risks out there on the internet. I just want to put that out there. Linux is, I'm not trying to in any way, shape, or form take away from what Linux is, but I want to be clear to our listeners who aren't technically savvy that while it is a step in the right direction, it's still up to you how you drive it. Just like a car, it could be a very safe car, but you want to drive it into a tree, it'll still let you, and you might get hurt or seriously injured or killed. There's no guarantees, regardless of how safe the car manufacturer claims the car is or how good its safety crash test ratings were. You know, that has it's totally irrelevant. It doesn't excuse you from becoming a better driver simply because you drive a better car.
Well, that's right. And, you know, a phishing scam is a phishing scam, and it'll work on somebody running Linux, Mac, or Windows. It doesn't matter. You know, if you're going to fall prey to it, you're going to fall prey to it. It doesn't matter what operating system or browser you're using. And quite frankly, Linux, if it became as popular as Windows, the virus writers would be writing viruses for Linux, and we would have to run antivirus software on Linux as well, I'm sure. But that's not the case, because Linux has a little less market share than Macs, and virus writers don't bother with Linux.
Well, and let's face it, if you can run Linux, if Linux will do everything you want, your Windows is doing, it's going to be a lot less maintenance on Linux.
It's a great choice, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it doesn't require as much upkeep as Windows does, that's for sure. Hey, it's time for another break. We've got one segment left. We'll be right back. More with Larry Bushy talking all about Linux when we return.
This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy, I'm almost out of time here. We have another. Can we squeeze in this email from Zen Dead, or do we have time?
I don't know. Maybe we can squeeze it in. Just to summarize,
okay.
Zen Dead is wanting to say he jumped right into Linux as soon as his netbook, which is an Acer Aspire 1, was supported right out of the box. He has Ubuntu Jaunty Jackalope, which is a version of Linux installed on it, on his desktop and his netbook. He's got them running Linux, and he loves it. He found the show, the podcast, over the weekend, he says, and is chewing through our back catalog of episodes, and just finished networking, our episode on networking, the beginners episode. And we have a bunch of episodes on various topics that we do. Networking was one we covered a few episodes back. And he says he's looking into Ubuntu Studio and looking into doing a podcast himself. And he'd like to have our opinion on Ubuntu Studio. And I have to say that Ubuntu Studio is a very nice addition based on Ubuntu that has a lot of pre-installed software for people doing audio and video production work, and even creative writers, authors, and so find it very good. It's made for multimedia produced, so it's a very good choice.
All right. Well, listen, Larry, we're just out of time here. Again, yep. It's goinglinux.com is the website, and certainly have we'll catch you next month on the third Tuesday of the month, and you'll be here. And don't forget, don't miss any of the episodes, and also the video.
Yeah, if you want to get you by, if you want to learn more about Linux in between Larry's monthly visits to us, check out his podcast. It costs you nothing.
Absolutely.
Just like Linux.
There you go.
And all the links are in our show notes tonight,
right.
The Going Linux podcast.
Hey, Larry, thanks for being with us here tonight. We'll catch you next month, okay?
My pleasure. I'll be here.
Have a good evening.
I'm looking
good night.
Forward to those videos, Larry.
Oh,
there you go.
You bet.
All right.
good night. Guys.
Tomorrow night, it's Wednesday Madness. That means open phone lines, all that good stuff. In the first hour, Alex Eckleberry. CEO of Sunbelt Software.
It's been a while since Alex been on, hasn't it?
It's been a while, yeah. He's back with our Malware Madness in the second half of the first hour, talking about all the latest antivirus and spyware problems and solutions. And then in hour two, Mike Cermak is going to be with the owner or operator of TechGuy.org. He's usually with us the first Wednesday, but he couldn't make it, so he's going to be here in hour two of Wednesday Madness to shoot the breeze. We'll read your emails, feedbacks, voicemails, all that good stuff. It's open mic night. Anything goes. Any questions?
It usually does.
Yeah, exactly. That's all coming up on tomorrow night's show. Again, don't forget to enter in all the wonderful giveaways that we do here at ComputerAmerica.com. Just go to ComputerAmerica.com right there on the homepage. You can see all the wonderful stuff and participate. You'll have a lot of fun doing it. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.